Hello, everybody. Big warm, big warm welcome to any of you who may be here for the first time. Thank you for coming. One of the radical and fundamental liberating truths that's revealed in awakening is that the world is in you. The world is in you. Not the other way around. The other way around, of course, is you are in the world. I want to explore this with you tonight. The world is in you. There are four fundamental or essential ways to wake up. The first is through being itself. Being itself is already awake. And yet at times it doesn't know its own wakefulness. Like in the baby that's simply being. You can look into a baby's eyes and you can see that they're simply being. But it may also be true that they actually are not cognizant of their own beingness. If this makes sense, it really is helpful, because if the baby is not cognizant of its own beingness, then perhaps that's why the baby goes on a journey to rediscover itself as it originally is. So the first way is beingness itself. The second way of waking up is through feeling. Now notice the differentiation, even in the way that the mind sees this. Being and feeling. Feeling is differentiated here from being, but not too far off. Kind of close. Traditionally, awakening through feeling is bhakti. Yeah? It's devotion. It's the path of feeling. It's the path of the heart. And there's many different styles of it, yes? Now, as feeling, you might say, really awakens, fullness of feeling. Fullness of feeling. What do I mean by that? I mean all feelings are free to be. Not just some feelings, but all feelings. All feeling. Yeah? In that, then it's realized that being is in feeling. Or feeling is being. We don't often find it that simple, do we? So the third way is through thinking. Interesting, huh? The jhana yogi. Through the use of thought, awakening takes place. That's tricky though, isn't it? one needs to kind of, you might say, awaken to the fullness of thinking, the fullness of that amazing creative thing called thinking. Again, we find a lot going on there, don't we, in the thinking. Different other qualities come in about the thinking. Thinking about the thinking, judging the thinking, comparing the thinking, evaluating the thinking. Trying to not think. Liking the thinking, not liking the thinking. But if it's looked at purely, directly, thinking is the manifestation of the creativity of the universe. However, that thought is actually appearing, including those, you might say, most challenging, potentially, thoughts, which are the self-deprecating thoughts. Because you don't deprecate anybody else until you've deprecated yourself first. You actually start right here, and then if that's not seen, if that's not recognized, then it can proliferate, it can go out. Quite messy, huh? Can get quite messy, potentially. There's the creativity. That's the creativity of the universe getting messy. And thinking. And yet it's a way of awakening. That's the third. And there's one more for now. And that's doing. Doing. Action itself is a vehicle or mode or way of awakening. In certain ways of language, it's karma, yoga, service, actions that help life as much as possible, in any way possible. Lots of different forms of that, yes? Awakening to what you really are through doing. Flips it a little bit, because sometimes we could get into a thinking and even a feeling that it's not about doing. If we took something like what the Buddha supposedly said, actions without an actor, doings without a doer, then we start going around trying to not do. That makes a lot of doo-doo. It's messy. Try not to do.
Try not to try,
yes. And then try not to try, not to try. Is trying a bad rap? What if I was to say, and the fifth way is through trying? Didn't say that. We'll just go with being, feeling, thinking, and doing. I've already suggested it, in waking up to the fullness of feeling, nothing's wrong with any feeling. All feelings are expressing their own intrinsic nature. All feelings are being themselves. And then we must include all thinking. Thinking is being. Right now, any thinking is being. And any thinking that might be thought later is being. And any thoughts that were ever thought are being. Okay? Brings it right in close. No wrong thoughts. That's tricky, because the Buddha said there's right and wrong. But what he meant was there was skillful and there was unskillful. Skillful led to freedom, liberation, happiness. Unskillful led to trouble, stress, problems, suffering. Mind gets a hold of it. Well, let's see, which thoughts are right and which thoughts are wrong? Which thoughts are skillful, which thoughts aren't? How do I apply the scripture to myself? How do I get this to work for me? I'm not sure. I'm having some confusion. I'm having some confusion, some fusion of thought, feeling. Being is lost in the shuffle. I better just do something. I'll get busy. I'll rake the yard. I'll go work. I'll write it down and look at it. I'll go talk to somebody, see what they have to say. There must be a way to understand this. Am I just talking about myself? Or just checking. So, why is it true that the world is in you, not you are in the world? Very simple. The whole world, so to speak, including you, if you see yourself as separate from it, exists in and as presence. The floor is presencing itself. The fan is presencing itself. These bodies are presencing themselves. The water bottle, the bell, the recorder, the clock, the bottle, you name it. All of it exists in and as the fundamental state of presence. Or another way to word that, everything is being itself. It's being itself as presence. So what does that mean? It means presence is the most intimate personal thing and is completely impersonal simultaneously. It's the biggest elephant in the room that nobody can put their finger on and say, this is where it is. It's here, not here. Why? Because it's everywhere. It's everywhere. And yet, in a way, kind of, it's nowhere also. That either relaxes something, or one gets worried. Because in the thinking, it might not make sense. It might not make sense. It's not logical to some part of the thinking, or even some part of the feeling. The reason why science is having some challenges understanding, quantifying, or qualifying consciousness is because consciousness has to be used to attempt to understand itself. This is like trying to understand your eyes while looking out of them. Do you see what I mean? Presence is that which everything exists in and is. Two different ways to word it. Now, in order for being, thinking, feeling, and doing, to be ways of waking up to what you really are. And please, do not misunderstand way as directional to someplace else. They're not like paths in the woods that you walk down from here to here. And I've just walked on the path of doing, and down there I found myself. It's a metaphor. It's not a literal thing. The way is in the realization that the only time is now. There's no path that exists in linear time to some other place called the end of the path of doing. This is a complete mental fabrication. Interesting creative thought. That's all it is. Points to nothing. There's nothing out there. That thinking, feeling, doing, and being is going to. All that's happening is what's happening right now, and now, and now, and now. So I did this conference once, okay, it was a big conference with a lot of these therapist-type people, a lot of helping types, and it was big, and it was in this big, big hotel, palace-like hotel. One of those ones that has the big grand ballrooms. You know how you have the ballrooms and then you have the grand ballroom? Okay, so we have one of the sessions in a grand ballroom. And it was probably 4,000 people in the room. And these facilitators were doing one-with-one sessions with people in front of 4,000 people. Oh, that was pretty cool. You know, it was well amplified, so you could be anywhere in there and you could hear it. If you were way in the back, you might have a hard time seeing, so you might need your binoculars. So you could see what the person's expression was and how it went with what they said. Because you could hear what they said, but I was maybe halfway back. I had a pretty good seat. It was a great session one of the guys did. He took this person through some beautiful, beautiful spaces. It was just quite touching. You know, we were all in it together. It was beautiful. And at some point, he just moved into, like, almost chanting to or with the person. And he was just saying, pretty loud at first. No. And it culminated. He didn't just start saying it. The whole kind of session built up to this powerful connection and nowness, and then he just started to say it. And then it just, he brought the volume down and he got to a whisper and it was just, no. It's very beautiful. He was articulating that petal on the flower of freedom. The only time is now. So what challenges some in terms of realizing, being, feeling, thinking and doing as ways of waking up is the perception, belief, investment, assumption that there is a separate self and that I am that separate self and that as that separate self I need to negotiate this world. I need to find my way in it and through it. And on a good day the separate self is doing pretty good. It's had adequate nourishment. It forgot itself in deep sleep and it woke up somehow refreshed. And it had its breakfast and it went off to feeling, thinking, doing. All the while being itself it was, separate in its sense of itself. And so then it learns or hears that being, feeling, thinking, and doing can help it wake up to itself. Little does it realize that it's always in jeopardy of finding out it doesn't exist as it thought it did. But yet it can't help but look for the end of itself. So it goes after the way with sometimes vigorous diligence and help from others who seem to be believing the same thing that it is. I must find the end of separation and unity, love. That's what I want. I even deserve it on Thursday. I'm okay, I am. I hope I'm okay, it says to itself and others. And this is just some of what it does. You can fill in your own story. Because if you can't, then you don't know what could be running your life. And if you can play the own personal story of the separate self, then you know something about how to encounter it. And if there's levity about it, then you're already transcending. It's thinning in its believability. Something's watching it. Freedom exists in choiceless awareness. The awareness that is the central feature of meditation initially appears to be biased because it's mixed up with other things. Some of those things seem to blend with the awareness a bit better, and other things don't seem to blend so well with the awareness. They seem to create friction. There's awareness and then there's friction. There's an awareness and there's something seemingly different than that awareness, something separate from that awareness, something in the way of that awareness. There's even these hindrances. There's desire and aversion and sleepiness and doubt and restlessness. And that awareness is so absolutely, unbelievably, fundamentally, essentially brilliant. It's absolutely not just intending illumination, it is illumination. It is the light of the world. It is the world. And so, even as the separate self is working away at something or other, awareness is arising. Awareness is there. Awareness begins to reveal. So ever clearly. There's no hierarchy in these ways. There's no better way. Beingness is waking up to itself through being itself. Through thinking, through feeling, through doing, constantly, in all states. Remember, the state is only presence, presencing itself as that state. And it's not enough. It's never enough to just think about this. Or write about it, or read about it, or hear other people talk about it. Who cares? And that's coming from one of my, I don't know whether anybody else ever said this, but I find myself saying it. Thinking about it, hearing about it, talking about it doesn't cut the mustard or the cake. It's only direct realization, direct experience of what is being pointed to here that reveals the world is in you. You are not in the world. So along these ways, lots of things happen. Like Jesus said, resist not evil. What is evil? It's the projection of the collective shadow of presence, presencing itself in human consciousness through forces like greed, hatred, and delusion. Resist not evil. And so the most complicated, difficult, darkened, unpleasant qualities of consciousness, when it's realized those qualities are presencing themselves, resist not evil. The only time is now. Freedom exists in choiceless awareness. Then those so-called configurations of consciousness just untwirl, open, unfold, or as I've been saying lately, liberate themselves. The only real purpose in saying this, if there's a purpose at all, would be to point to that possibility of realizing this. And sometimes there can be a click, a realization arises right with the words. Even for the so-called one or separate self who's never done any kind of spiritual practice. Sometimes one thinks that spiritual practice is ripening me so I can really be receptive, open, available, and the understanding can dawn. Let me suggest to you that's possible. Let me also suggest to you it's completely unnecessary. Such a mysterious thing is happening. It's incomprehensible all the time. The flowering of presence, presencing itself as the world, you are that. If you want to try to understand that, center it in some place like the heart or the brain. Probably not the base of the spine, right? But some people might need to do it there. That's where it's centered. And emanates from there. It's the base of the life force in the Kundalini. It's an idea. If that's what the mind needs to do, then it's creatively doing it. If the feeling's drawn to that, then it does it. Just see how it's unfolding. Miraculously, mysteriously. Ever new. In the timelessness of now. Only time is now, and the now is timeless. I could go a bit further, but I'd like to stop here for the moment and just see what your response may be. Anything at all. If you have something you want to say, you want to talk about, question, yes, Karen.
Thinking about what you just said, in fact, probably 5 or 7 minutes ago.
I can't hear.
So I was just thinking, reflecting on what you just said probably just 5 or 7 minutes ago.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, if those are the four paths to awakening, we're always awakening because we're always doing one of those four things.
Isn't that interesting?
Mm-hmm. Right?
Hey, not bad.
Why are we not doing one of those four things?
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
So it's kind of like grace. It's kind of like you're being propelled toward awakening, regardless of what you're doing or not doing.
Yes, and even the propelling, right? It's just a thing that seems to be appearing to happen, and yet awakening is happening before the propulsion towards. Yeah. Kind of handy, huh? See, it doesn't stop there, though, because what about the teaching that says you're already awake? Oh, come on. I don't feel that way. I don't think that way. I don't think I'm doing what's awakening. I'm not even being. I don't know. That's ridiculous. That's just somebody's idea. It's a spiritual bypass. It's just the mind saying this. But it feels valid sometimes in saying that. What do you mean we're already awake? What do you mean we're already free? What do you mean freedom is inherent, intrinsic, already here? I'm not feeling that. I'd like to.
It's kind of like a misperception that we're not awake, but yet we're doing these things, doing, being, feeling, thinking, and some kind of, I don't know, it's like turned inside out.
Isn't it?
It's very
yes.
Interesting.
So perception, yeah, is key, isn't it?
How would you define presence? Presence,
consciousness? Well, I use some terms carefully, synonymously. Okay, like try this, okay? Just in your own sense of things. What's the difference between presence and awareness?
I think presence is manifestation, whereas maybe awareness is before manifestation.
Anybody vote for that one? What's the difference between awareness and consciousness? These words are used. People write about these things and speak about these things and share about these things. What's the difference between awareness and consciousness?
Awareness happens sometimes. Consciousness is always.
Okay. There are people who apparently speak with authority, and authority, in the way I'm using the word, is direct experience. They're speaking from direct experience. They're not quoting somebody else. They're not reading a scripture. It's not a theory. And they say the exact opposite of what you just said. Awareness is the field. It's constant. It's happening. Consciousness is of the object. This is classic Abhidharma, Buddhist teachings. Buddhist psychology. There's eye consciousness, smell consciousness, taste consciousness, hearing consciousness, thinking consciousness, body consciousness. There's a new moment of consciousness with every sense contact. It's happening very fast. There's no self in that. There's no I or me in that. It's just appearing and disappearing. Consciousness. Just like quick flitting through. The matrix of awareness are these little clips of consciousness. What's important is to know what we mean by what we say, if possible. Or another way to put it is, do you know what you're talking about? I mean, it's fine if you want to, you know, quote somebody else or say, you know, this is what I heard. That's why, you know, how is this going down? My 15-year-old son was writing a paper. I forget what the topic was. He's in high school. And he asked us to look at it. And my wife got to it first. And she looked at it. And then she said, let me see some of your sources. And so they looked at the sources and she said, you're plagiarizing. And it was just like he was just copying it out of the book. I mean, somewhat innocently, I hope. So she said, you can't do this like this. This is not the way to do this. You need to rephrase this. You need to run this through your own, you know, process and see if you can, you know, articulate this differently. You don't want to just copy somebody else like this. Intellectual property is incredibly stealable. I think especially when it comes to matters of awakening. So I tend to use the word presence as the active manifestation, and I use the word presencing tonight, of awareness. And I tend to use the word consciousness as of the object, but not always. You see, the great thing about awakening is that it's infinite. There's no edge, there's no end to the learning. That's why it's called awakening. And people say, well, what is awakened then? And then the definition is sometimes given. Awakenedness is the culmination of awakening. And that's when the self perception is kaput. It's not mine. It's somebody else's definition. So what else?
I found it intriguing when you said choiceless awareness.
Yes. What was intriguing about that for you?
I've always linked choice with awareness.
Sure. Yeah. Give me choice, because choice is about freedom to choose. I want to be able to do what I want when I want, baby.
I've always felt that through awareness, being aware of options, gave me the ability to choose.
Mm, sure.
So when you said choiceless awareness, I was like, struck me as intriguing.
Uh-huh.
I don't know what else to think about it other than that.
Uh-huh. Okay. It's interesting, though. So let's look at that a little bit. Do you notice what you were saying was predicated on the idea that you or something there can make choice, has options? Let's see. See, if I feel like where I come from is a place that has less options, and then I can open up my options and more is available. Things that I like, I can do this, I can do this, I can travel, I can move around, you know. I can even pick my friends on good days.
Awareness that the world is in you.
Well, that's, hold on that for a second. Okay. We're building up something just a little different. The perception that you can make choices. Okay. There's an appearance that choice can be made. Like, for example, this hand moving. Okay, how did this happen? This is a very easy, common idea that I made this happen. I did this. What happens in meditation is that it's revealed that there's a process of interrelated parts that gave rise to this happening, and this was one of those parts, that the hand moved, or the voice spoke, or you turned left, or you turned right, or you got married, or you got divorced, or you moved to Siberia, or you moved to Guatemala, you grew your hair long, you cut it off, you went to the beach, all of it. What happens is, it's seen that there's no one in there making those apparent choices. There's this magical, mysterious thing called impulse, or intention. And it's interesting teaching that in intention are all the mechanisms for the realization of what the intention is pointing towards. Intrinsic, already present. That's why the Buddha said, karma is the light of the world. He didn't say awareness, he said karma is the light of the world. To understand the world of causation. He's talking right now dualistically, the relative world. One needs to understand how that functions, how things manifest this way or that, or as it's said from a different tradition, as you sow, so shall you reap. So the mind gets a hold of that and says, okay, I can choose a better way. And you know what? It can, to an extent. But ultimately, it's a hopeless case. Because if the mind could choose liberation, complete unalloyed emancipation, why doesn't it do it right now? So what happens is, the sense of I am the doer, again, here's Hinduism in its essence, I am the doer, it begins to break down. Begin to see there are actions, but there's not an actor. There's doings, but there's not a doer. There's impulse, there's intention, there's thought, there's feeling, there's action, and all of these things are being themselves, unfolding. Oh, now some people flip it again and they just go, okay, well, it doesn't matter then. I'm just going to... When I used to go to Hawaii and teach more, there'd be a lot of people who come to the classes who were living on the beach. A lot of what I called white Rastafarians. You know, and they'd be taking peyote and they'd be doing this and they'd be getting naked and they'd be having sex and then they'd come to class. And they were very beautiful in a sense, you know. I remember one day one of them gave me an avocado, and he gave me this avocado with such affection. He just, it was like he was kissing me as he gave me this avocado, you know. It was really sweet. But they were into, like, you know, wanting to do whatever they wanted to do whenever they wanted to do it. And in hanging out with them for a little bit, it didn't take very long. So I'd usually stay about a week to 10 days at a time. Then the suffering would manifest. Like, two of them would come to class. You could see that they were trying to be lovers, and they were hating each other. And there was just real pain and hardness there. Again, if you can choose liberation, then choose to not have this state right now, my friend. Nothing doing. As you sow, so shall you reap. So what happens is the idea that I am choosing, that I have options, begins to be seen as that. Huh. Comes into a little bit of question. See, the reason why freedom exists in choiceless awareness is when awareness in its purity is manifesting, it has no bias or prejudice. Then there's nothing to choose and there's nothing to not choose. This is just what's happening. Mm. Including being bored. Mm. Brett and I were talking about boredom today. Mm-hmm. How you doing with this? You have a response?
No. Just trying to soak it all in.
Uh-huh. It seems like this appointment is somewhat of a step towards that.
Say what?
It seems like this appointment would be something of a, I guess towards of, like, moving up me or towards that. Choices.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I mean, when there's an investment in choice is going to free me, I will free myself through the power of my increased options and, dare I say, ever broadening, hopefully, recovering portfolio. Because the portfolios of many are in the dumps now. So hopefully through that, I will be better off. It's grand disappointment. That separate eye perception that's trying to use freedom or find freedom through options. It's really a cooker. Big disappointment. Big letdown. Even really, like, depressing. And some people, when that opens up, they don't know what's happening, they misunderstand the depression. They go and get psychotropic medication. And what they're having is an awakening to reality. The only one that can be disappointed, though, is the one who's invested and believes in future betterment, and at times can't allow reality to teach and has to invest in hope for a better tomorrow. But if it's really hard where you are and your mind can generate hope and you can feel a little better because you're hopeful, then you step on that step in the ladder.
Yeah, but it seems like a disappointment is like a huge gift that is given to you. And then if you're just going to go and create more meaning that is going to lead you to more disappointment, it doesn't seem like a wise thing to do.
Yeah, you got it. Mm-hmm. It's totally giving you its fullness and its potential and its teaching. But it's choiceless awareness that allows that to be realized. Mm-hmm. Not a biased awareness that says, oh my gosh, here we go, I'm getting disappointed again.
Well, that can happen.
It can, but look, what I'm not talking here about, you know, let's go out and really try to masochistically hurt, you know, and suffer so we can wake up. That's the bed of nails approach. You know, like lay on a bed of nails. And if you're ready to live in the ice of the Himalayas with a loincloth, then go for it, but I like it here. Yeah, you're right though. It's a grand, grand teaching.
It's a gift that it seems to me.
Big gift.
And it comes the possibility. I mean, from it comes a huge possibility of being even more conscientious about the way you are creating this meaning in your life and helps you and everything.
Yeah.
So I mean, I don't know if you can actually create a meaning that will lead to less suffering.
Yes.
I mean, I'm contemplating that right now. And
yeah.
It seems like it might be possible.
Yeah. It's like if you don't like the way if you don't like the way the furniture is in the room, right? You go about rearranging it. You know, like but once it's clear that you're not really fundamentally. Changing anything. You're just moving the parts around a little bit. You can get some temporal comfort there, Juan. Freedom's beyond comfort and discomfort. It includes them, but it's beyond them simultaneously. Beyond, also, if you want to play with the notion of sequence, which again is time, which again is thought, beyond means before also, you see? Because what happens before comfort and discomfort is also beyond it. See, our common notion of beyond is, oh, after, out there, beyond. No, it's prior to as well. That's also another meaning for beyond. Different one. Brett and I were talking. This is Brett, my friend from... I don't know, your last place of visit before here, was it Kentucky?
Before I came here, it was.
Kentucky. So Brett's from Kentucky, here for a little bit. Fulfillment doesn't come so much from what you do, but it comes a little bit more, if we're talking about relative fulfillment, it comes from how you do what you do. Okay, so this is the infusion of attentiveness inside the activity. Right. So some people are very fulfilled when they do their work a certain way. And then they find on Thursday, I don't know why that's coming up again, but here it is, Thursday, that's tomorrow, it just doesn't quite have the, it's like it's flattened a little bit. I watched a friend who I don't see much anymore, physically lives in England now. And he'd been doing computer programming and websites for a long, long time, and it wasn't really what he wanted to be doing. He wanted to be doing art of a different kind, and this didn't feel like art to him. And I knew that, and he knew that. It was very clear. But he was good at what he did, and he made a living with this graphic design and the art, you might say, of web design. Okay. So he's working on the website. This is the only website I've ever personally really been closely involved in, which is the one for Gainesville Vipassana Society, and I can't believe it still works fairly well. We made it 12 years ago, and I've hardly updated it. I just left it. and let it be there. Anyways, I didn't need to say that, but I did. So one day we're working on this, and he gets in front of the computer, and he just plugged in. He just like, if you liked Maseratis, you know, or a Ferrari, he just like, he got in one, and he just went, and I just observed his posture, and I felt his energy, and he just connected so fully to this, and all he was doing was just typing a little change on the keyboard. It struck me because I felt, you're completely in this. So there's a doing, and there's a kind of a fulfillment there in that doing. You see, if you find that your thoughts have a limit to the quality of fulfillment that they can bring, then you might notice that your life at times is organized by feeling has more fulfillment in it. Feeling more full, feeling freer, feeling loving, feeling happy, feeling connected. This seems to have more meaning, right? More fulfillment in it than thinking. It's a subjective interpretation. Then the person actually realizes that their personness is the manifestation of being. And that it can have feeling in it and thought in it, and it doesn't matter what the feeling is, it doesn't matter what the thought is, it doesn't even matter what the doing is, that it's just this unbelievably beautiful, timeless, timely, unfolding presence. And there seems to be feelings that go with that, like gratitude, like a happiness that isn't dependent on anything, like a joy without any fixed object. That's why the Tibetans call it the ground of being, because it's a ground. So while we're busy thinking that we might need to make meaning, meaning is making itself through everything that's happening, as it's happening.
I was curious to find out what your point was about your friend who's not wanting to do the website and everything, but some sort of other art. He didn't really go much more into that.
Yeah, my point was that in the very thing that he actually, in a way, didn't want to be doing, you know, his heart wasn't in it, when it came time to do it, I felt him plug in so fully that I watched him, and as if I was watching Thich Nhat Hanh walk. Mm-hmm. That was really cool. It was like, you want to see that you're in everything? Watch somebody who does walking meditation the way that guy does walk. It was extraordinary. Mm-hmm. Walking just to walk. Walking not to arrive anywhere. See, so somehow my friend, it seemed to me that he transcended any resistance, any so-called evil. Resist evil not. Anything that was in, he just plugged in. So what, maybe, he was thinking, that I'm not doing what I want to do. This is what I'm doing now.
It seemed to kind of strike something personal with what's going on in my life right now. I'm actually currently studying computer programming and website design. And I have sort of some other dreams down the line of like things I would like to be doing, but right now my life's not really taking me in that direction. And so that's something I revisit a lot.
What is the something you revisit a lot?
The fact that what I'm currently studying uh-huh. is not necessarily what I would like to see myself doing down the road.
Hmm. Yeah. So you have thoughts and or feelings about that.
Yeah.
Is it also true that at times there is a perception that what you want to be doing supposedly down the road mm-hmm. will be more fitting or suitable or fulfilling to you than what you're doing right now? Mm-hmm. This is a dream.
Yeah.
It's called a daydream. It's a very interesting one, isn't it? It's an attractive daydream. Fulfillment exists on my vacation. When I'm doing what I'm meant to do, when I've found my purpose. This is a manifestation of the separate self.
It sort of brings me back to an experience I've had a couple of times where I had a dream, and the dream finally happened, and instead of being fulfilled, it was almost devastating that the dream was over.
Uh-huh. What's
sort of reminded me of that?
Yeah. What's actually another form of devastation, or we use one word, disappointment, is to see the very beginning of the dream.
Mm-hmm.
It's called "Here I Go Again." I can't help it. Or the poetic version of that would be stumbling towards the light, because one thinks that one is out of it in a little or a lot. Anything else tonight? Anything at all?
I have just a thing I was thinking about recently. It's like, what do you think it was like before we invented words and language? Because I noticed that pretty much my whole reality exists in words. Think about my knee hurts, and it doesn't just hurt, I think my knee hurts,
yeah,
in these words, you know. So I was thinking about, I wonder what it was like for people before language was invented, before you had words and words built into concepts and things like that.
I thought about that earlier when you was talking.
Well, if you observe babies, it's immediately clear.
His experience when he didn't know, sorry, what's your name?
Roger.
When he didn't know anything except that he was. Did you have words? I don't think he had words.
No.
I think people who've had strokes and have become aphasic don't have words. So is that then just awareness or just being?
Well, what you're describing is a belief that your world exists primarily as thought. That's a thought, Karen. It might be firmly, you know, invested in. This is
really true, but it's still just thought.
To who? To who is it really true?
One who thinks things.
Who is it that thinks things?
The thinker.
That's what the owl was asking just earlier.
Yeah. Right. So, I mean, he's got something to say, which is in a way nothing. But you know, you're laughing, Karen. You know, and it's fine. And yet, if you find the interest and curiosity, you can do the same thing. You can look closely and see for yourself whether your world exists primarily as thought or whether that's just the thought, the belief.
Well, I think in meditation you're supposed to get beyond thought. I think I've been there a little bit here and there in meditation, but like there's no more thought, so I know it doesn't only exist as thought, not only, but it sure does structure something.
Well, I mean, what I'm also...
I was trying to say, like, if we could spend more time without words, we would be, like, more enlightened people.
Well, that's another idea. It's not true. Silence is fine, but it's no more valuable or less valuable than talking.
I mean... still being
huh?
Present.
Well, right now you're talking from your ideas about this, which is fine.
Right.
But if you pause amidst this, now or later, and look at where you're talking from, that's what I mean, that directly, where you're talking from, And then another angle, who's talking? And you answered it actually kind of quickly there before we got to the owl's teaching. And that is, I don't know. But instead of like moving past that and back into what you do know, relax into not knowing.
Consider it curiosity.
I don't like to tell people what I think about it too much.
You say that a lot to me.
What?
Relax into not knowing.
Well, you know, when we talk, if you get it going really good, you can control me to get me to do what you want right now. You speed up sometimes, okay? You'll start to talk, and then as you get going, you kind of speed up and your mind gets more activated. What I'm thinking about, for what it's worth, is I'm thinking about when you described for us that experience of lying down and the smile and the eyes. Remember that one?
I wasn't lying.
Oh, okay, well, whatever you were doing, I imagined you were lying down. You described an experience of awakening. Okay, remember that? What does that experience have to say about this part of your mind that says I exist almost exclusively in thought?
Say that again.
What does that part, that awakened space that you touched, what does that have to say? Like, let's interview it for a second. What does it have to say about the idea that you exist primarily as thought? That was a quickie. Didn't take any time to think about that. Just shoot from the hip. Doesn't matter.
That experience was like beyond everything, beyond concepts, beyond words, beyond feelings, like, you know, if I could say awareness existed in a form or a being or a presence or whatever, that was it. So, no, that's why I said, to me, it's kind of like fun. It's the mind likes to ponder.
Uh-huh.
So it's entertainment.
Sure, it's creative. That's why I suggested that the thinking path is full of creativity. It isn't to say the others aren't also. You just look at how creative the thinking is. We're talking about pondering now, which is different than ruminating and various other kinds of forms of thinking. So it's going to be fun.
Yeah. Or to think about presence. What is presence? Or to think about the fact that, this is being.
Right. And as you're thinking about presence, or thinking about that being, okay, presence is being itself through the activity that's happening, as you're thinking about it, okay?
So then I'm creating more space for that to happen.
Okay.
So I'm doing a good thing.
Right, if we have something that's, you know, less good, then that's a good thing, I guess. Fundamentally, it just is what it is.
It's just all happening all the time.
Anything else before we stop for tonight? It's just about 9:00.
I'd like to say that I like the fact that the world is in me.
Yeah, it's a beautiful thing. The awakening.